Hello and welcome to Biblical Breadcrumbs. And as you're seeing how Jesus begins his ministry, as you're seeing how he's going about doing it, you're seeing a lot of his teaching, right? And so we've taken you through chapter 6, we've taken you through the first part of chapter 8, and you're seeing Jesus's teaching as he's kind of throwing out revolutionary concepts, really, as he is trying to tell parables and connect his teachings to stories that other people would relate to like the common man, I guess you would expect. He's telling stories about, you know, farming. He's telling them to farmers so that, you know, the farmer can relate to it and understand these great spiritual mysteries. But even as you're focusing on that and on these great things that he is saying, and you're contemplating what Jesus says, I also want you to contemplate what he does. And so we're going to look at the other half of Luke chapter 8. Again, we're not going to cover everything in great detail, but we are going to look at the other half of Matthew chapter 8, starting in verse 22 and really going through the rest of the chapter. Because here you see Jesus as he's not teaching anymore. He is going to be teaching, but it's teaching by example, not teaching by just, you know, telling stories and using words. Instead, he's going to reinforce all of these things that he's saying, and he has these great sayings. Well, how is he allowed to say all these things? Because he has great power. And so Jesus outpours his power here, and Jesus throws some weight around to convince the apostles, or who would be the apostles, the 12 disciples he picked. He wants to convince them that he is who he is, and that he is who he says he is, and that his claims are correct. And so he's going to start in verse 22. There are going to be three main instances, four stories as we go through here, that relate to Jesus's power, his power over specific elements, his power over specific times and places, and just kind of giving you an overview of what Jesus can do. We've seen him heal a leper before, and that was pretty impressive. We've seen him heal from a great distance before with the centurion servant back in chapter 7. Here we're going to see him as he affects nature and the weather. He's going to heal that. He's going to fix that. We're going to see him interact with demons and be able to heal some spiritual maladies. We're going to see him be able to instantly heal long-lasting illness and disease. And we're even going to see him be able to heal death, and by heal death, I mean bring someone back from the dead. A lot of these things are crazy, unless they're true. And so as you go through, consider who are the people who are witnessing all of these things. You'll see various different witnesses to this guy. You'll see various different people who are aware of who Jesus is, and that's really going to play into it, because Luke has talked to some or many of these people. Presumably, people who have seen who Jesus is and who testified about it to him. And so as we start reading today, let's read in Luke chapter 8, let's read that first story, starting in verse 22, going down through verse 25. One day, he and the disciples got into a boat, and he told them, "Let's cross over to the other side of the lake." So they set out, and as they were sailing, he fell asleep. Then a fierce windstorm came down on the lake. They were being swamped and were in danger. They came and woke him up, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to die." Then he got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waves. And so they ceased, and there was a calm. And he said to them, "Where is your faith?" They were fearful and amazed, asking one another, "Who then is this? He commands even the wind and the waves, and they obey him." So the disciples are in a boat. Jesus is there too, and they're going to cross to the other side of the lake. That would probably be the Sea of Galilee. Interestingly enough, the gospel writers call it the Sea of Galilee. That they're used to calling it the Sea of Galilee. That's the term for that area. Luke, who is a Gentile, instead of being, you know, Matthew, Mark, or John, who are all Jewish guys, Luke, who is a Gentile who did not live in the land of Israel, has actually seen huge bodies of water and, you know, has been around some actual seas, like the Mediterranean Sea. He's, like, spent a lot of time traveling around in that. And so when he calls the Sea of Galilee, he calls it a lake. Partly because he's not Jewish, so he doesn't have that connotation, and partly because, you know, the Sea of Galilee is actually not big, not compared to, like, the Mediterranean Sea or the Black Sea or, you know, any of these other seas Luke kind of calls him out on that, which is an interesting side note. If he was just copying the other writings, if he was just copying what people of the area say, he would call it the Sea of Galilee. But he doesn't. He calls it a lake, which I think is kind of funny. And so Jesus crosses over to the other side of the lake. The disciples are in this boat, and Jesus falls asleep. Now, apparently, when you get out on the Sea of Galilee, or when you get around it, the weather can change really, really quick. I was just with some people yesterday who had been visiting the area, and they said, you know, you could have perfectly clear skies 1 hour, and then like an hour and a half or 2 hours later, it's a full-on thunderstorm. And there's just no telling what happens around the Sea of Galilee. Everything is really, you know, messy. The weather is not predictable. And so these people go across when it's clear, but as they're going into the lake, a windstorm comes down. It just comes out of nowhere. That's what would happen in this geography, in this area. And so everybody's in danger. They think they're going to die. Jesus is sleeping somehow. And so they wake him up. Jesus, Jesus, we're going to die. No, you need to help us. And Jesus says, he gets up and he says, stop. And the wind stops, and the water stops, and the storm is gone. And then Jesus looks at them and says, look, where is your faith? Right? Jesus has claimed to be the Son of God. Jesus has claimed to be God himself. Okay, guess who made the wind and the waves? Well, God did. And so if Jesus is God, if they believe, if Jesus is God, if that is how that works, then they don't have to be afraid of the wind and the waves, because God's creation will not swamp God. That's not how it works. God's not going to be killed by his creation, okay? That's just not how any of this process can work. God is big enough to make it. He is not then going to be killed by it. And so, guys, like, it's just water. What's the big deal? As human beings, you're afraid. Why are you afraid? Because you're lacking faith, because you don't believe. Even after all of the stuff that Jesus has done, you don't believe that he's God. Well, here's some more proof. And so Jesus heals the wind and the waves, and he puts a stop to that. And again, one of the things you find that's very interesting in verse 25 is that the disciples are confused about this. And they say, okay, who is this guy, right? It's very clear that the disciples, from all of the records that we have, the disciples do not start out believing Jesus very much. They believe bits and pieces about him, but they don't believe everything that he says. And it's only after a lot of work and a lot of like being exposed to these miracles over and over and over again, it's only after all of those things that they finally start to realize maybe there's more to this guy than we might think there was originally. They've seen him heal a leper. Right, they've seen him heal various bunches of people. They've seen him heal the centurion servant from way far off. They've seen him do all these things, and yet they still, when push comes to shove, they don't believe who he is, and they go somewhere else. Well, where is your faith? Okay, your faith needs some shoring up. Here's a miracle. It saves you from the wind and the waves. Don't worry about it. And the disciples don't say, oh, this is the sign of him being God. They say, okay, who is this guy if he can do that? 12 witnesses in the boat. Judas would be dead. By the time Luke is writing, Judas would be dead, and possibly James would have been executed as well. That leaves about 10 people. They could easily tell you that this was a formative experience for them because they were freaked out on the water, but then Jesus fixed it all of a sudden. Strange happenings, and yet it happens. And so there are those witnesses to that event. But what's stranger is what they do next, which happens in 26 through down through verse 39. Luke 8, let's start reading in verse 26. Then they sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. When he got out on land, a demon-possessed man from the town met him. For a long time he had worn no clothes and did not stay in a house but in the tombs. And when he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him and said in a loud voice, what have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torment me. For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him, and though he was guarded, bound by chains and shackles, he would snap the restraints and be driven by the demon into desolate places. What is your name? Jesus asked him. Legion, he said, because many demons had entered him. and they begged him not to banish them to the abyss. A large herd of pigs was there, feeding on the hillside. The demons begged him to permit them to enter the pigs, and he gave them permission. The demons came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and drowned. When the men who attended them saw what had happened, they ran off and reported in the town and in the countryside. And then people came out to see what had happened. They came to Jesus and found the man the demons had departed from sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Meanwhile, the eyewitnesses reported to them how the demon-possessed man was delivered. Then all the people of the Gerasene region asked him to leave them because they were gripped by great fear. So getting into the boat, he returned. And the men from whom the demons had departed begged him earnestly to be with him, but he sent him away and said, "Go back to your home and tell all that God has done for you." And off he went, proclaiming throughout the town how much Jesus had done for him. Interesting story here. So Jesus crosses back over the lake, finishes his crossing, gets to the country of the Gerasenes. Some versions read Gadarenes. I did some research on that one time. There are a few textual variations on what the name of the region is and on what they would call regions to the east of the Sea of Galilee. And so essentially it boils down to there are different spellings, and some of the authors of the New Testament may have been using the different spellings. Gadarenes, Gadara, the Gerasenes or Gerasa or the Gergesenes or Gergesa, they're all pretty much the same region. I believe there's a differentiation between two of the regions, but they're like a mile apart, so it effectively doesn't matter. It's on the east of the Sea of Galilee, from what I remember. It's been a couple years since I've looked into it, but I could look back into it at some point if I ever wanted to. They come to this region, the Gerasenes, the Gadarenes, the Gergesenes, whichever. It's opposite Galilee. Galilee's to the west of the Sea of Galilee. That's where the Jews live. Gadara or Gergesa is not. And so they get opposite Galilee. They're stepping out of Jewish territory, presumably. And he gets out on land. Jesus gets out, and this demon-possessed guy comes to him. Now, demons are these forces of spiritual evil, essentially. Like angels are forces of spiritual good that God sends out on specific missions. Demons are kind of the opposite, the counterpart to angels. Demons are forces of spiritual evil that the devil would use, presumably, to accomplish some missions and some work for him. And so there's this demon who's possessed this guy. In fact, it's many demons who's possessed this guy, and he's very famous for it. He's a demon-possessed man from the town, and for a long time, he didn't wear any clothes. Okay, that makes you pretty unique, right? For a long time, he didn't stay in a house. He stayed in the tombs. That's pretty unique. He would be, you know, the naked guy living in the cemetery, right? That's who this guy is. He's the cult legend. He's the Bigfoot who kind of appears every now and then disappears and nobody knows about him, right? He is the local legend. He's the one reason that everybody stays out of the cemetery. In fact, they try to bind him up in these chains and shackles, it says down in verse 29, but he can just rip them apart because he's got this mad demonic strength. And then he runs off into the desert somewhere. And so they can't control him. They can't, you know, get him out. They just work around him as best they can. But everybody knows who this guy is. So he pulls up to Jesus. And Jesus sees him. He's a demon-possessed guy. And so Jesus does his natural thing. And he tells the demon to come out. And, you know, maybe a demon comes out. But there are a lot of demons in there. And the demon-possessed man says, no, I don't want the demons to come out. Again, he's you know, possessed by these things. These things are really having a strong influence on him, enough to give him a ton of physical strength and who knows what else. He's got some issues, but he doesn't initially want to part with them. And so Jesus is trying to help him out. He's not willing to accept that until Jesus talks with him and says, "Hey, like, what is your name?" And he says, "You know, I got a lot of problems, man. My name is Legion because I have a ton of demons in here." And the demons start freaking out because they know that Jesus can tell them exactly what to do. And so they see a herd of pigs on the hillside and they think, you know, we're going to be safe there. Why don't you let us be in the pigs and then we'll be there and we'll leave this guy alone and you know, later we'll sneak out and get somebody else. But for the moment, we'll just be in the pigs and we'll leave everybody alone. And so Jesus sends him into the pigs. Unclean animals to the Jews, by the way. I believe they are in Gentile region, or these people would be Gentiles around them, and so it wouldn't be a sin for those people to have them, but it would be unclean for Jews to have them. And so unclean animals, unclean demons, Jesus puts the demons in the pigs, and the pigs go and destroy themselves, run off into the sea. If in the historical research, it's either running off a cliff or running down a long sloping plain right into the Sea of Galilee, and they all drown. And so the pigs are gone, and presumably the demons are gone too, because the demons were in the pigs. And now, there are these people who saw it in verse 34. There are these men who saw it, the men who tended the pigs, the pig keepers. They run off and they go into the city and they say, hey, there's this weird guy who fixed the naked cemetery guy. They took him and they fixed him, and he put all the stuff in the pigs, and then the pigs are gone. Like all of our livestock is gone. It's all gone at this point. Like everything's bad. And so everybody comes out to see, like, what in the world is happening? And they come out to see, and what do they see? They see the freakiest thing they could have ever seen. In verse 35, they came to Jesus, and what did they find? They found the man the demons had departed from. They all knew him. They had tried to capture him. They couldn't capture him. They all knew who this was. And they see him sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind. They see a man. They know he's, like, permanently insane and unclothed. And they see him sane and clothed. And the text records that they were afraid. And the eyewitnesses reported to them, like, everything that had happened, and these people are well aware of the situation. And so what do? They are terrified, and they ask Jesus, can you please just go away? Can you please go somewhere else? We don't know what to do with the situation. The apostles are seeing this. The demon-possessed guy, now no more a legion, he's seeing this. The people all around him are seeing this, and they're witnessing to Jesus' power and the fact that they don't want that power around. They don't like it. They're scared of it, but they do recognize that he had something to do with what happened. And the demon-possessed man does as well. Now no longer legion again. Mr. Previously Legion comes down. He wants to follow Jesus, but what does Jesus say? No, you don't get to follow me. You know what you do? You get to go and tell your story, because everybody knows you were that crazy guy, and everybody knows that you had nothing of self-control or anything like that, and yet now here you are, and you're perfectly fine, and you're going to go and be an example to those people. How many witnesses does Jesus establish for what he can do here? The demon-possessed man is a witness. He was personally a witness. He felt, he experienced that personally. He was the key witness there. The 12 disciples, soon to be apostles, they were witnesses to the things that he did. The pig keepers were direct eyewitnesses to all the weird stuff that just happened, right? The people in town who are familiar with this man, who are familiar with Legion being full of demons, they're seeing him now not full of demons, and they're saying, wow, that's interesting, isn't it? That's something that's new. That's something that's different. That had to be this Jesus guy. And all the people from all the towns around, he comes from a region called the Decapolis, I believe is recorded in Mark chapter 5. The Decapolis is an area of 10 different cities. Most likely he would be known in at least his, but probably, you know, several of them, if not all. And so he goes into that region, and he starts proclaiming Jesus because everybody knows that he's the crazy guy, and everybody knows that there's something wrong with him until Jesus, and then there's not. That's only achievable through Jesus' power. So he can heal nature, and the disciples see that and are like, wow, that's impressive. And then he can heal human nature, and the disciples see that and say, wow, who is this guy, right? Who is Jesus? Again, it's not just about the things that he says. Those are all great, but those things that he says, they are backed up by the things that he actually goes and does. And that's followed in this last story, starting in verse 40, going through verse 56. There are two stories here. I'm actually not going to take the time to read them and go through them specifically, but I will summarize them for you. Jesus is on his way. He's walking around. He's summoned because there's this dad whose girl is sick, whose daughter is sick, and the dad, Jairus, wants help for the daughter. And so as Jesus is going to help her, to heal her from whatever is going on, this woman who's, you know, been permanently injured for the last 12 years, in verse 43, she comes up to Jesus, and she kind of sneaks some healing. She touches him, the power goes out, and he questions that and ends up finding her, but, you know, she's pretty well aware of what happened. She touched Jesus, and she was healed. She's an eyewitness to that situation. She knows exactly what happened, that Jesus healed her from all her afflictions. The crowd around then moves on, and they get to the synagogue leader's house. They get to Jairus' house, and his daughter has died, and Jesus puts everybody outside except for Jairus and his wife and a few of his apostles, Peter, James, and John. And verse 51, although it's named Peter, John, and James for reasons we'll go into probably next episode, he puts out, only a few people are seeing this, but he raises that daughter from the dead, and then she's fine. And you know what happens? Everybody knew that she had died. And even though there's a command in the very last verse, in verse 56, he tells them, don't speak about what happened. But guess what? They all knew that Jairus' daughter died. And so as soon as she walks out, they know that she was dead, and then Jesus walked in, and now she's alive again. What happens? Tons and tons of eyewitnesses to what Jesus can do. It's not just about what he says, right? Evaluate what he says. That's really important. But also evaluate the things that he does, because those actions are purely Jesus' own. They're verifiable. They're historical. They are incredible and ridiculous, unless they're true. But history and all the eyewitnesses we have, they all verify that these miracles did actually happen. And so I'll leave you with that. Go ahead and read that last story if you want to get more of the details and kind of see how that plays out. Just keep in mind that Jesus here is just displaying his power for all. So that's the thought I'll leave you with. Jesus, he is not only a good speaker, he is a good actor, right? Not actor in the sense of like playing a role, but actor in the sense of doing something. He is a good worker. He is a good accomplisher. He is doing all sorts of things. He's not just all talk and no substance. He is all substance, and he brings incredible teaching with that. That's where we'll leave it this week. As always, I hope you enjoyed. I hope you benefited from it, learned something, or saw something new. God bless, and I'll see you next time.